Put yourself in the position of a college student right now. You've been investing a ton of your time, energy, money into an education that you assumed would lead you to gainful employment. But then a pandemic hits, and everything you assumed about the job market is being tested big time. How worried should you be? What should you be doing right now to prepare yourself for entry into this crazy world of work? Today, we welcome Dr. Brianna Randall, Executive Director of the Career and Internship Center at the University of Washington in Seattle. We'll spend some time discussing how the pandemic has changed how career development services are provided. We'll dive into the questions about what students need to be doing right now during this pandemic and in light of all the barriers and challenges they face to prepare to launch their careers. And we'll get Brianna's take on what makes her work purposeful and what any of us can do to experience meaning in what we do all day. Welcome to the Purposeful Work Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Dick. The Purposeful Work Podcast is brought to you by Pathway U, an online career assessment system that uses predictive science to help you find joy, meaning, and purpose in your career. For more information and to join, go to pathwayu.com. That's pathway, then the letter U.com. On this episode of the Purposeful Work Podcast, we welcome Dr. Brianna Randall. Brianna graduated with a doctoral degree in counseling psychology from Indiana University in 2004. For PhD students in counseling psychology, the last step, other than the dissertation, is a full-time, year-long doctoral internship, similar to a medical residency. Brianna completed hers at the Counseling Center at the University of Washington, and she never left. She took a job as a career counselor there after earning her doctorate and has held a number of different roles in the years since. In 2019, Brianna was named Executive Director of the Career and Internship Center at UW. She's a seasoned career professional, a visionary leader, and an expert on coaching students toward purposeful work. Welcome, Brianna, to the podcast.
Thank you.
Well, let's get this out of the way. You live in Seattle, a city long known for its obsession with coffee. How much more coffee do you drink per day compared to the average American coffee drinker, which is 2.7 9-ounce cups?
Well, Ryan, this might surprise you, but I actually do not drink coffee.
Wow, I am surprised.
Yes. My parents did not drink coffee. And then people said, oh, when you go to grad school, you'll learn to like coffee. And then, you know, when you have kids, you'll learn to like coffee. And also when I moved to Seattle, of course, I just never have. I definitely drink more tea than I used to. So make it early morning, usually some kind of caffeine at lunch and something around 3 or 4. Trying to find enough caffeine to make it through bedtime routine with my kids, but not too much caffeine that I can't fall asleep. It would be interesting to know in Seattle how our coffee consumption has been doing.
Well, I'll just tell you, the typical American city, this is not based on data, but there's like a coffee shop on every block. In Seattle, there's 3 coffee shops on every block, and there's a line out the door in every one. I feel right at home. I'm a fiend. I start in the morning. I don't really quit until after dinner time. So I always feel at home there. But you're an anomaly.
Yes, I am. But yeah, it still surprises me being here this long. There's an outdoor, really nice mall right near the UW, and there are 3 Starbucks in the mall.
That makes sense. Yeah, that fits what I would assume.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for that. I have already shared a little bit of your career journey, but I'm curious, how did you get interested in career development work?
Mm-hmm. For me, this was a clear moment. So when I started my master's degree in counseling psychology at the University of Kansas, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, but I really liked my career counseling course. And then a bunch of us went to happy hour. So it was some master's students, some PhD students, at a bar drinking, just sort of talking about our families, getting to know each other. And I was the only person at the table whose parents were divorced. And what we know from national averages is that like half of us should have had parents who were divorced. So that actually got me thinking, how does the family of origin impact whether one goes to college or what one studies or what ambition somebody has? And so that just kind of, it sparked an interest, and that's what I ended up focusing my doctoral degree on. I did a lot of experiences in different career centers. And then even when I came out to UW, as you mentioned, I came out here for my more or less residency, and I did that in the counseling center. But I knew that I might want to eventually work in the career center on campus, so I negotiated as part of my internship to work 4 hours a week in the career center, partly so that I could develop relationships and skills, and also I positioned it as a way to help bridge the two centers. And that ended up working. I made some good connections and was hired on a one-year contract, replacing somebody who had taken a leave of absence to write a book, then another one-year contract, and then I was hired permanently. So a very distinct moment of interest, followed by a lot of trying things out and landing where I've been now. I've been in the Career Center since, I think, 2005.
So you were engaging in job crafting even as an intern, where, you know, the job description was what it was, but then you figured out a way to augment it with some things you were really interested in. And that ended up leading to what eventually became a permanent opportunity.
Yes. And so I encourage students to ask questions, make connections, and really do good work, you know? And so it's a combination of all of those things. And there is some element of fate or luck and what opportunities happen to be open in a center at any given moment, right? Yeah. But having asked the questions, developed relationships, all of those things contribute as well.
Absolutely. So this is the Purposeful Work Podcast. Would you describe your work as purposeful?
Absolutely. In so many different ways. I mean, some of what we do for students is we help them find their own purpose, right? So they come to college maybe not having any idea what they want to do, and we help them narrow that down. Sometimes they feel like they know exactly what they want to do, and then something happens, whether it's internal or external, and they decide maybe they want to look for a different path, and we can help with that. Then there's also helping people get their actual job or find their actual success. So a lot of what career centers do is job search coaching, resumes, mock interviews. And that's, you know, they've already sort of found their purpose, they're pursuing it, and we help them get it and launch post-graduation. And all of that is very meaningful and very purposeful. And honestly, through the hard times is what keeps me and our center going, is I feel like we all feel a lot of meaning behind supporting students.
So part of your purpose is helping these students who are brimming with potential optimize their purpose by connecting them with opportunities through which they can kind of live that out.
Yeah, and we've been making that more obvious recently. So I think career centers can have a reputation for being the resume place.
Yeah.
And we certainly have been that, and we will continue to be that, because resumes, even though they're kind of boring and not sexy, they're very important to the job search. But we're redoing some of our resources to outline six things that we can help students with and also that we want students to be thinking about. The first one is we label it find purpose. The second one is building skills, getting experience, building relationships, telling their story, which is where resumes come in, and finding success, whatever that might be, and it's very different for everybody. So we're really helping students with all of those things and trying to be very clear with them and how we write our website and what types of appointments they can schedule. That these are the things that they should be thinking about, planting seeds a lot.
Sure. You're someone who I know has always cared a great deal about evidence-based practice. How does research shape the services that your office delivers?
Research and assessment and survey work. It's one of those things that I believe very strongly in, and one of those things that I feel like is really hard to find the time to do and to do well. But in terms of how we look at research to impact what services we offer and how we approach the work, we kind of straddle a couple of worlds. So we straddle the vocational psychology world that is really geared towards research on career stuff broadly, not just for college students. And then we look at the work of what tends to be high impact for college students. So that's a different body of work. And there are some similarities and some differences, but a few years ago, we put together some thoughts on what is high impact based on that research. So one thing we're trained to do is really provide students with the opportunity to see mentors. Even if we can't run a big mentorship program, how can we showcase people from diverse backgrounds working in diverse career fields so that they can explore and see themselves in those? Another people-related one is it's really important for students to be able to get feedback. And honestly, in a college as big as ours, we have about 30,000 undergrads. So the classes are big and relationships have to be really intentionally developed. I want students to be able to do an internship or an undergraduate research experience or to have a mentor where they can get feedback on their skills and their experiences. That's different than somebody who's in their family and maybe in, you know, has a vested interest in what they choose to do. So yeah, we do try to look at a couple bodies of research to help us figure out how to spend our resources and how to spend our time, and to try not to just be reactive, which is a habit that we can get into. We're a small staff, there's lots of students, but how do we take a step back and think, okay, if we only have limited resources, how should we be spending them? And we do try to look at research to do that. We do some assessment of our own work that then helps us further refine our work. So on some of the large scale, we do run a couple small mentorship programs that are industry-based. We use a pre and post on the career adaptabilities inventory to see, are people making statistically significant changes pre and post this intervention that honestly we're spending a lot of staff time on. And thankfully, they are showing gains. And so we view that as, okay, this is high impact, even though it's taking a lot of staff time. So let's continue to do that. Let's also see if we can scale it and help more people have this high impact experience. But we do want to make sure that how we're spending our time is helping people find purpose and pursue it in the way that we were hoping.
I love how you frame it as a stewardship question. You know, it's with limited resources. We want to ensure that what we're doing is high impact. And so you figure that out in part by taking a step back and looking at what works from the research literature and using that to inform how you shape your services. But then you also conduct your own research on the effectiveness of what you're delivering and then let that inform what you should continue to invest resources in. That's inspiring.
Yeah, and I would like us to be able to do more in that space. We're doing what we can, and I just hired a new associate director who also really likes the idea of assessment and using data. And so I'm hoping that in the next few years, we make even more improvements in that area.
Earlier, you mentioned how purpose sustains you during tough times. You were named executive director of your office in 2019, and just however many months into that, this pandemic hit. How has COVID changed the way you deliver services in your office at UW?
Well, everything's virtual. So just a little history. I mean, we're in Seattle. We were the first known epicenter in the US of COVID-19. So we went remote as a campus very early. In fact, I think we were the first to announce that we were going to go remote. And we've been remote ever since, all through spring term, summer. We're 90% remote this fall. The benefit of our center is the UW already has a Zoom account, and we were already offering webinars. We were already offering video and phone-based appointments for students who wanted those. So for us, thankfully, moving all of our services online wasn't as difficult as it was for some offices. We do teach credit-bearing courses, and that was a lift for my spring quarter instructors. We were offering three different courses that we had to reshape really in a couple of weeks. Once we made that initial transition, and we did have to rethink some other things as well, then we had to start thinking, what do students even need in this new reality? Like, we can't just do everything we used to do, but via Zoom. right? They have different needs, different access to technology. So we've been trying to understand what they want. And it's kind of funny, they still, what we have found from students is they still want our resources. They want access to what we have to offer, but they would prefer not to engage with us personally. So what I mean by that is they still read our weekly newsletter. They still visit our website. We have 5,000 hits or more every week. They're still coming to webinars where they can turn their camera off and just listen and take notes. They're still in Handshake applying for jobs, but they, you know, they're zoomed out. They don't necessarily want to do another thing on camera. So they're not as interested in appointments and drop-ins. So we've been working really hard this summer. I feel like a web architect. How can we redo our website to make it more intuitive? And how can we put more, we actually have a section now called DIY resources. So how can we get you the advice that you might get from a coach, but in a, you know, 30-second video that you can watch at 2 a.m, which I do know is a prime time for our website. It's between 12 and 2 a.m.
Nice.
So it's moving what we're doing online, but also rethinking what do students tend to be reacting to now and really trying to get as much as we can in their hands 24 hours a day without necessarily needing them to have another Zoom meeting.
Sure. So let's play it for instance here. Imagine I'm a senior in college. I'm coming to you for help. I'm planning to graduate in the spring and I need to find a job. But all I'm hearing is how bad the economy is, how many people have filed for unemployment. What's your advice for me?
I would say I won't say main piece of advice, but a big piece is to not just listen to the headlines. So even when overall employment was pretty bad and there were lots of layoffs, there was still a lot of college level hiring going on. So the platform that we use for job and internship postings, it never went to zero. There were always internships being posted and always jobs being posted. And it absolutely took a hit. And I don't want to sugarcoat this and say everything's fine. It wasn't fine, and it still isn't quite back to normal. But it wasn't as bad as the headlines would make it sound. And so just to keep doing the types of advice that we've always encouraged, we actually kind of joked early on. And again, I don't mean to make light of it, but the advice that we're giving students is not dramatically different than the advice we've always given students, is that maybe now they'll hear it in a different way, right? So we want students to be building skills, however, and that might look different, right? Maybe you need to volunteer to build a website for a nonprofit that didn't have one before but needs one now in a pandemic, or maybe your internship is going to be remote. So the methods by which people do these things might need to look different, but we want them to be building skills and experiences and relationships, and also to have an open mind. And again, we've always encouraged students that, you know, your first job is important, right? I mean, we want you to be doing something that is leading you to your grand path, and we want you to be making a living wage. But we don't want people to put so much pressure on themselves that first job needs to be perfect. Because first of all, no job is perfect. There's always going to be parts of your job you don't like. But also, there's always ways that you can build skills and get experience and build relationships in an experience that then you can leverage to get your next thing. So take the pressure off, have an open mind, apply for some things, do it for a while, and then leverage those to get to the next step. And I was thinking about this if I was an employer. First of all, hopefully employers and grad school admissions committee will be understanding. Like, we've been in a pandemic. People's applications are not going to be exactly how they've been used to seeing them the past years. But I would rather see somebody who graduated college in a pandemic and they spent 6 months delivering packages for Amazon. You know, I live in Amazon territory. Spent 6 months doing that, and then they were able to find something, rather than spent 6 months at home not doing anything, right? And again, there's reasons why people need to do that during a pandemic. but apply, get some experience, and then be really intentional about how you leverage that for the next thing.
Yeah, I think that's so important and helpful. We knew already that the world of work has shifted such that change is the name of the game. Even before this pandemic, the average 50-year-old in the U.S. has held a dozen jobs. And so if the pandemic just accelerates these trends, then hopefully that does help take the pressure off getting that first job right. You know, it's if you can expect a lot of change, then think of it as a learning experience. What can I learn from this? What can I provide this employer? But there doesn't have to be this sense in which this is permanent or locking me into a path that I'm never going to be able to move away from.
Yeah, I've joked with our staff that I actually don't even really like the word career. It's in the name of our center. We're the Career and Internship Center, and it's our URL, right? But I think the word career is kind of intimidating. It makes it sound like it's this lifelong thing, and this lifelong trajectory that I'm on is all very linear and tied to each other, and this first thing that I do has to line me up for this whole lifetime. I think it's very intimidating, and I've wrestled with taking career out of everything that we do. But then, you know, when people are thinking about wanting to get help from a center like ours, they would look for the word career in a directory, right? So we wrestle a lot with this issue of how do we make our services known and available without scaring people with the word career.
You know, we've been talking about this pandemic. Layered onto the pandemic are serious concerns about systemic racism in the U.S., in our education system, in the workforce. A lot of people have been thinking about this in a deeper way than they have before. And I'm wondering, how does your office grapple with these realities when you're providing support, especially to students of color?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have been working, we call it IDEA, so Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Access. And we've been working in this space for more than just the last few months, right? Really wrestling with how do we support students and also how do we support employers in this space? And of course, our work has accelerated in the past few months. And taking a step back, what I know from my own team and from a lot of career counselors and helper types is like, let's do a program. We're good at doing workshops and webinars and panels. Like, let's do that. And I love that. But I think it starts several steps before that. We're not going to get Black students to come to an event if they haven't seen us out and about and they don't see themselves on our website and they don't feel welcomed and safe in our space. So we're working on some of those kind of pre-steps. Then we are also working on some new programming initiatives. We're going to be doing an identity panel series, and our first one, which will be in the fall, is titled something like Being Black in Corporate America. And we really are pursuing some Black alumni who work in very different job fields and roles, just to be real. Like, here's how they made it work, and here's the struggles that they've seen, and here's the advice that they would give. We do have some identity communities on our website, so some targeted resources and advice for students of color, first-gen students, international students. So we're definitely doing some stuff on the student side. And included in that is some targeted marketing. So like I mentioned, we have some industry mentorship programs. We want to do a lot of marketing for those programs to not just students of color, but also first gen, other populations who I think could really benefit from the exposure and a mentor. So how can we do some additional marketing? We're also working on the employer side. So we have a new resource on equitable hiring, and we'll be doing a webinar for our employer partners on that. We have an employer webinar series, so this will be an addition that we haven't done before. And consultations and things on the employer side as well. And the one thing on the student side I forgot to mention is a new webinar called something like Job Searching with Identity in Mind. So if you're a student of color, how do you assess whether a potential employer would be a good fit for you and is supportive of, you know, Black employees, those sorts of things. We're really excited to launch that in the fall as well. So I think it's a multi-angled, multi-layered approach, and we're working kind of systematically on a variety of different things. Most of all, we want students to know that we are a safe place and we are here to support them, and that we want them to utilize our resources if they feel like they need us. A lot of students have great support networks and can get great advice from other places, but if they feel like we could be helpful, we want them to feel safe.
Thinking ahead, you know, I think a lot of people are engaged in this, looking at the future and trying to ascertain what kind of lasting changes will emerge when the dust settles from this slice of history. What do you think the future looks like for career development in higher ed? How do you think it will change permanently as a result of the issues that are happening right now? And how is your office starting to adapt to that?
I feel like this question is a little bit unfair because I feel like in some ways we're still surviving day to day and like understanding the permanent impacts a lot for my brain. But when I hear people say, you know, when things go back to normal, I really don't think that they will. I don't know what the new normal will look like, but I don't think we'll go back to where things look exactly like they did. I think for us, we'll continue to offer hybrid like we did before the pandemic. So generally, if we offer a topic in our workshop as or in our lobby as a workshop, we would offer the same thing as a webinar to make it as accessible to everyone as we can. So how it will change, I think for us, we will continue to offer a lot of things virtually, not only as a way to engage with our staff and employers and alumni, but also as many resources as we can on our website for people to get the help when they need it. I also, to not feel like I'm just saying the same thing over and over, but it is what I believe. I really do feel like students need to be taking an active, intentional interest in building skills, experience, and relationships. And there might continue to be evolving ways to do that. When I think about college students, I don't necessarily want them right away to know exactly what they want to do. That's not really my goal. I want them to be active in trying to find their own purpose and what would be a good fit for them and what they do like. And I think you can do that a lot of different ways now. We just got a subscription to LinkedIn Learning. So students can take micro courses online. And if they're thinking, you know what, I want to do a computer science degree, but I don't know that much about it, why don't I take like a couple hour long courses on LinkedIn Learning, see if programming sort of makes sense to me or totally blows my mind. And that would be a good way to kind of test out some things that you might want to study and some career fields. I think the advice will largely stay the same. The ways that people can do those things will continue to evolve as technology evolves as well, and to be open to those.
That's helpful. You know, a theme I think that cuts through that response and others throughout this interview is the importance of adapting. You know, it's sort of recognizing the ways that things are changing and then actively engaging in a response that accounts for, you know, those changes. So it is an unfair question. We don't know the future, but what we do know is that if we have an open mind and develop these skills and capacities for just coping with changes and adapting, then probably we'll be more successful than if we just sort of stick to one way of doing things, regardless of what's happening in the world around us, right? So a lot of what you've shared really in this interview have been examples of that, both in your own career path, but also in how your office responds to the needs around you. And, you know, you do take a step back and look at what research suggests is helpful, but you also listen to your students and to what their needs are and adjust on the fly based on what you learn. So I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have a skills-based campaign right now called Level Up, Build Skills Employers Want. And there's three areas of skills. One is manage self. The second is engage others. And the third is produce results. And within each of those, there's three competencies. And adaptability is in the first bucket of manage self. So I guess in some ways, we're trying to walk that talk and not only be adaptable in terms of, well, let's just bring everything into Zoom, but what do students and employers need now in a new reality and 6 months from now, a year from now, 5 years from now, what do they need?
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Brianna. And I really appreciate your taking the time to share your wisdom with us on this podcast.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. And thank you, listeners, for tuning into this episode of the Purposeful Work Podcast. The Purposeful Work Podcast is brought to you by Pathway U. Jordan Way is producer of the podcast. To learn more about Pathway U, go to pathwayu.com. And as a thank you for listening to this episode, Pathway U is offering a 20% off coupon code. When you check out, simply enter the code PURPOSEPOD. I'm your host, Brian Dick. We'll see you next time.